This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 9th, episode 1315, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, horse world.
Coming to you live from Santa's workshop at the North Pole, everyone's favorite elves, Jamie Jumperbottom and Glenn Scooter Pops.
I dug that one out of the archives. I don't remember where those names even came from, but I have no idea.
I don't either. I don't even remember that. So
I think that was from years ago. Jennifer put that together. It had something. I don't know what it had to do with. I don't remember. But good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being here. We're going to have some fun today talking about movies and other things. And but before we get to that, the other day, Monday, you mentioned that that poor Norman was having issues. He had fallen down when you were working on him in the arena, or you were trying to do a kind of a join-up thing when he fell down on his own and got all scraped up, and you were having the vet out. And that's the last we and the listeners and I knew what was going on. So any updates?
Yeah, I want to talk about this at the beginning, then we can move past it, and I have to deal with everything I have to deal with. But so I had my wonderful vet, Dr. Hendricks, came out yesterday, and she did a bunch of, you know, neurologic tests on him and a lot of the, you know, blindfolding him and pulling his tail and doing all those neurologic tests, and nothing was really showing up. So we took him to the arena, and she's like, okay, what I want you to do is to basically kind of recreate what you were doing the other day. She was so thorough. And so we basically, I let him loose in the arena and I send him out, and she's like, basically, I want him to get his heart rate really, 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 like get him moving. And I got him galloping around and trot, canter, gallop, all those things in both directions, and then joined up with him. He came right to the middle like he's supposed to. And she listened to his heart rate and handed me the stethoscope.
That's never good.
And I don't even know what I was hearing. I've been in the 10-minute box for eventing and had to check elevated heart rates. And it's a, you know, a very, just like a lub-dub, but it's lub-dub, but it's fast. Norman's fast heart rate sounded like somebody, like animal on a drum kit. I don't even know where, like, what was what. It sounded like, it kind of frightened me a little bit because I've never heard anything like that. And so basically he has a major arrhythmia that is worsened with exercise. His resting heart rate is fine. You wouldn't even know. I mean, I had a pre-purchase done on this horse, which I'm going to be getting my money back for. But he has an arrhythmia that is worsened with exercise, does need an EKG for further diagnosis. Obviously, I don't need to have any further diagnosis because he, I'm reading what she told me. So it's electrical impulse related. The structure of the heart is normal, not valve related. There's no murmur present. But this is
why they put pacemakers in people.
Yeah, exactly. This is, she said that the most common presenting sign for what he has is death. You know when the racehorses fall down dead,
and the eventers right after they jump. Yeah.
Jump a jump and they collapse. This is what they have. We were incredibly lucky to find it, although unlucky to find it, because he is officially not suitable for riding. She said maybe somebody could trail ride him or do, you know, some lower level dressage. I'm like, but he's not trained for those things.
But and he works himself up into a lather too. I mean, it's not like he's completely trained, quiet, dead, broke horse anyway, you know?
I mean, a lot of the behavioral issues that I've had with him, she totally says it's because, like, when you start to tack him up, he gets nervous. He just gets antsy. Like, he just has anxiety about it.
The anxiety causes the heart rate to quicken, and then he feels crappy. Yeah.
He gets the anxiety because of the heart rate, like, because it's going to come on, because he doesn't feel good. He doesn't get enough blood flow to his brain when he's working. So he starts to get nervous because he's not going to feel good. And then another issue that I had with him was he would just stop. And it's the weirdest thing, just be on a horse trotting along and all of a sudden canter along and they just stop. And she said, basically that's what he does to reset, kind of reset his heart rate and get his own heart rate down. But what he did on Saturday was he passed out. And she said that that is something that happens when they need, like, a normal horse, the heart rate gets faster and faster and faster. His can only get so fast before he passes out and he just resets. And that's kind of, that's how, like, the horses do it. And that explains why I turned around, he was laying there and I was like, get up, because I thought he was going to roll in my saddle. So that's
okay. That just sucks. Oh, yeah. The whole way around.
It's terrible. Mm. I mean, I've never experienced anything like this before. I mean, obviously, you know, looking at it from the big picture is I am better that I didn't find out. Like my vet said, she's like, this is the kind of thing you find out when you're galloping across country.
I mean, that's just, it's better for both of you that you didn't find out that way.
Well, it's better, I guess. I mean, the whole thing just sucks. I mean, I'm trying not to drop the F-bomb because it just really, really sucks for several reasons. He is a 17-2-hand vacuum of food, okay? Vacuum. If he was a 15-hand quarter horse that lived on air or a mustache,
13-hand pony,
then he'd be much easier to rehome, to place with somebody, you know. But the problem that he eats probably as much as four of my horses put together. And obviously now we understand why he requires so much caloric intake, is because his heart doesn't work correctly, you know, and he's not getting all the new. But to keep that weight, he eats that much. And I don't know anybody who wants a pasture pet that eats, you know, 80 pounds of food.
Yeah, most people don't want 17 and a half hand pasture pets. That's not.
You know, I'm stuck in this situation. Well, I was stuck in this situation where, you know, I know his old owner did not know. She really wanted him to go to the right place.
And that's
place.
Why he wasn't performing the way she was hoping he would perform either.
Yeah. And she just wasn't what she wanted. And so she found me and sold him to me for not very much as far as what he looks like and he should be, you know. So I called her, and fortunately she is incredibly wealthy, and her mother has a farm, just a 1-acre Phoenix farm, you know. But so she actually said she would take him back.
Really?
Which is amazing. Because I didn't have to.
You got lucky there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't have to make the decision
to
put him down, you know, I mean, because that's pretty much like, you know, my vet said he becomes a liability where I can't, you know, not that I would ever sell a horse with an issue like that. But we all know people who would. She's like, he's a liability now because he's diagnosed. You sell him some, you know, or I can't even send him to a rescue that rehomes horses.
No, you can't do that either.
It may get lost down the road that this information happened. And not only could somebody get hurt and killed, I could get sued for it.
There's only two choices you really have in that situation with a situation like that. Boy, this is so hard because all of us horse owners have to deal with this at some point or another. I mean, you put him down right now, or he runs. You put him out with the horses. He runs around the field one day and collapses. Runs around in the field and, you know, passes out. And you constantly have him passing out all the time, injuring him or other horses when he's doing it. Or people, or your child. I mean,
it's a really, just really crappy situation. Now, fortunately, she said she would take him back, and she will.
He'll be just a pasture pet.
Well, I mean, yeah, a pasture shouldn't have pasture. So, you know, the life that she's going to reevaluate, she's going to give him 3 months and see how he handles being in the stall and turned out in the arena. And that's kind of like the only, they don't have like a big giant field. I mean, of grass, this is Phoenix. But I don't know anybody else I could send them to, you just can't because of the liability. And the worst thing that could ever happen is that this horse ends up at an auction on a Saturday morning. That's my biggest fear of any horse that you own at some point, you know, that becomes their fate. And I just think that he's fated to do something like that. It would be a nightmare. So she saved me from having to make a very tough decision. One that she probably is going to have to make herself. But as of now, she said I could take him back. She'd keep him for at least 3 months and kind of see how he's behaving and how he's, if he's happy and if he's eating well and going to this life, and just to see how much it's going to cost her. Cause it's her mom's place. She's very young. She's 20 something. So there it is. I'm out of horse. I'm just devastated. And the thing is, like, I feel like I should have done more. You just always feel like it's your fault. Like, I feel like I did something. And Chad's like, you didn't do anything. It's not, you know, you probably saved him from what you were just.
Yeah, because you had the vet out when anybody else would have went, I just tripped. So Chad's right about that.
Well, it just sucks, and I just want to fix him. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, he was listed as a dangerous horse, and now I know why. She didn't know why he was dangerous, but he just kind of has an issue. You know, he just kind of stops and he snaps, and now you know why he's listed as dangerous, because even though she didn't have a diagnosis for him, and just sucks. I got him.
Yeah, and the only reason that you wouldn't, because the only reason that a vet would check after after working him up like that is if they had a reason to suspect something physical. So you got him. You knew to get him worked up to try and figure out what caused that issue. So yeah. We're not going to solve anything with that today.
I appreciate everybody that wrote me yesterday going, I need to know. And you know, I told some of our listeners basically under an arrhythmia, and it just sucks. And so I just wanted to let everybody know. I'm going to keep him for a couple more days and spend some more time with him, and then I'll send him on his way. And she's like, my door is always open. You can visit him anytime you want. So it's nice.
I wish it was better news.
Thanks. Yeah, that's why I want to just get it over with at the beginning of the show. Okay. Let's move on.
All right.
Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
Oh, she's actually doing a call here. So,
okay. Daily Winnie, go.
Yeah, I'll do Daily Winnie's. Well, my Daily Winnie goes out to our wonderful auditors, those that pay a few bucks every month to become a part of the club, the Auditor Club. I got to tell you, I've been going to them recently for a lot of different stuff, and they've really become, you know, I don't know what I had envisioned the auditors to be. It was a way for listeners who really get value out of the show to kind of give some value back and to support the hosts, because half of that money goes to the hosts every month. And you know what? It it doesn't, you know, it probably, when you divide it up among the hosts, doesn't amount to a whole lot, but they do appreciate it. I mean, it because they
I
know
do
it's,
appreciate
yeah,
it.
It's coming because you know it's coming from them, right? I mean, that really makes it, you know, no matter the amount, it really makes it more appreciative. But what they have really become is a focus group. They've become the best focus group any company could ever have because they care. They're invested in it monetarily and emotionally.
So and auditors are basically people that like the show, and so they donate money every month to our costs. So.
Correct. And, you know, it. I really realized how special that is. I was doing an interview for the School of Podcasting the other day. It was a follow-up on the Radiothon to give his podcast listeners a follow-up on the Radiothon and how that went. And I got to talking about the auditors, and he said, do you know how special that is? He really made me understand that that just doesn't happen with other shows. So thank you so much for that. We really appreciate you being part of it, and good on you. Thank you so much.
Well, for those of you that have just a little extra spending cash in your pocket, or you're wanting to buy me something really nice for charity for this Christmas.
I noticed how you couched it in charity. That always helps.
It goes to charity. According to Leland's.com, you know, Leland's, we've talked about them before. They specialize in sports and American memorabilia, vintage items, rock and roll items, and horse racing items. An American Pharoah halter with a letter from Bob Baffert saying that he actually wore it. So a worn American Pharoah halter is listed up for auction. And its price currently, its reserve is only $10,000. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was $10,000.
Does it say how long it was on American Pharoah? Like 1 minute when they put it on and off?
Put this on. Okay, take it off. Put this one on.
Does it actually have like any dirt on it?
$10,000. And then they also have a Kentucky Derby trophy, Spend a Buck, from 1985. I guess the widow didn't really care about it. This is not for charity. This is for their particular money. Is listed, the Kentucky Derby trophy can be yours for only
$50,000. Whoa!
The reserve. That's
for
the
what horse?
Spend a Buck in 1985, the Kentucky Derby owner's
Yeah,
trophy.
That ain't going to happen.
What if Spend a Buck is somebody's favorite horse and they have 50,000? I mean, that's the starting bid. That's not even...
That's big money.
It's crazy. So Dennis Diaz, is the guy who won that trophy, and his wife, who is now a widow, is selling all his crap.
Didn't want that pretty horse stuff word. Anyway.
Pretty harsh, man. He's dead. Take it all out. Get it out of here.
Who cares? He won the Kentucky Derby. I hated those races in the first place.
Something you would keep as a family memento. Your great, 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 great.
Kids can buy it if they got 50 grand.
Yeah. It's all yours if you can give me $50,000. Screw taking care of my family and handing something down. Not my kids. I'm just the second wife. Widow.
All right, let's go to Jennifer quick if she's there and available. Do you want to do
and
your
I
daily
do
winnie?
I apologize if that's not the case and if Dennis Diaz was like a total a-hole or maybe they're
don't apologize.
Out, I don't know,
it's okay.
More fun.
All right, Jennifer, what's coming up?
On today's show at 20 minutes past, today's Back on Track, two more Wednesdays till Christmas edition. The latest horse-centric documentary to hit the big screen, Unbranded, goes under the microscope as listener Mary Ellen helps us with a review. And in case that wasn't enough to chew on, Dr. Cubitt covers forage for winter in the Horse Health Report. And right before the credits roll, Horse and Country TV's Victoria Spicer has the European Report. And happy National Pastry Day, everybody. Please celebrate responsibly.
Thank you very much. Well, we're going to go right into our review. Jennifer and I know a ton of the listeners last night saw Unbranded. It was playing all around the country in kind of little private screenings. And I thought it would be fun to get a listener to help review it. And I know she saw it a little while ago, but we have Mary Ellen, one of our auditors, on here. Good morning, Mary Ellen.
Good morning. How are you, Glenn and Jamie?
Good.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Now, you're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes. Yes. I'm outside of Philadelphia, Pottstown area. I know you guys used to live around here, so attended. So, yeah.
I'll be up there in January for Ada. That's not too far from where you are, actually.
Hey, you can sneak me in.
You can help. Jennifer's not going. Jennifer's not going, so you can help co-host Monday morning. Just come on down.
We'll
put
that
you.
That would be awesome. It's actually right down the road from me. So yeah.
Well, let me ask you. Let's start with you. We're going to keep this somewhat spoiler-free because, well, I don't know. They rode Mustangs from Mexico to Canada. I think there's no spoilers there, but we'll try and keep it as spoiler-free as we can.
No details. Just
Jamie hasn't seen it yet. So.
Keep it
general.
Right.
All right. So, what was your impression?
Okay. I absolutely loved it. And I wanted to see it in the theater because, first of all, there's going to be scenery. They're riding 3,000 miles and everything else, which absolutely did not, disappoint by any means. It was amazing. The scenery, the weather, just the whole atmosphere. And I think the main reason I wanted to see it in a theater was because you knew it was going to be all, or 90% anyway, horse people.
There was a lot of mucky boots. There was a lot of mucky boots in ours too, Mary Ellen. So,
And just the reaction that you get knowing that it's mostly horse people, it just raises that anticipation. And you're going to get the same, everybody's going to be feeling what these guys are doing. And that's, one of the neatest things about being at any live horse event or any event with a bunch of horse people. You're going through it with them.
I have to agree. I have to tell you, on that point,
so cool.
That was so true. We were in this little theater. It was a hippodrome in downtown Gainesville, which we had never been to downtown Gainesville before. So we were there, and it was this old-fashioned theater, Jamie, with the big high ceilings. They still do plays in there. And this thing, it what they did from 1911. So it's been around a long time, and it had 68 seats in it. So it was tiny, and it was all horse people. And and Mary Ellen, you found this too, I'm sure, they reacted to things that horse people react to. Not that you would not have had the same reactions in the theater to that particular thing that happened on the screen, because horse people are the ones that appreciate that particular thing. And I think that you
exactly.
Found the same thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to talk to Jen for a second before I came on. A friend of mine who didn't get to go, she was so bummed that she didn't get to go with us that night. This was all the way back October 7th that we saw it up in Allentown at a small theater too. She did buy the DVD, and we're having an Unbranded party this Friday night.
Yay!
With another bunch of horse people.
Oh, cool. This is one you could definitely watch again. No question about it.
Yeah. And I'll have to keep my mouth shut. That's going to be the hardest part.
Watch a scene. It's nothing worse than watching it with somebody who's already seen it, and they're going, oh, take a look at this. Don't miss this. Look at this. The whole way through the movie. There's nothing worse than that. Yeah, exactly. Don't leave now.
Give me the remote. If anybody gets it, I have to hit pause. You can't leave now.
Cool. Very cool. We, Jennifer, let's hear your point of view on it.
I was unsure what to expect.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Are you about to tell me that you didn't like it because there was a bunch of fake Winnies?
No. Oh, there were no fake Winnies.
I'm glad you brought that up. There was not a single fake.
No, these were real Winnies.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
it reminds me a lot of the Buck film in that I was a little unsure to expect. It was not what I expected, and it was better than I expected. All three.
Okay. Yes,
definitely.
I was prepared to be disappointed.
Yeah, because so many times when they do horse films, you are disappointed. And, you know, there was one comment. Chelsea said, I'll admit, while it was visually beautiful, I wanted more about the horses and a little less about the cowboy drama. But, you know, I kind of disagree with her in a way. Maybe it's because I'm coming from the horse husband point of view. I'd be happy to hear what the others think. But this was about the horses, yes. And there was a lot about the horses. But this was about those guys. I mean, this was about them and the horses doing 3,000 miles. So you couldn't make it totally about the horses. They weren't by themselves. They were being ridden. It was the decisions the cowboys made that got them in the situations they got into. So, and it was really a story about cowboys doing this ride with those particular breed of horses. Mary Ellen, what do you...
I think so too, because just the decision that they had to come to set this all up in the first place and everything else, I think you had to put their stories in going through, because I think all of them, you know, expected but didn't expect the same with them going through all of this. They, I think they knew that they were in for a lot of, you know, hard work and everything. Obviously, they're going 3,000 miles. But some of the situations that they did get into, how could you expect any of it? So their reactions and everything to all of what was happening was, you know, and their feelings about it and whatnot and you know, kicking loose and everything else. I think that just rounded the whole thing out a lot better.
I did think of Jamie the entire time because of Thor. And
really?
Yeah, I did. I thought of Thor the entire time because these horses were so Thor. I mean, it was Thor would do this ride and he would do it willingly and faithfully. And, you know, he would get you to Canada. And these horses were so trusting and so tough. I mean, you just realize how damn tough these Mustangs are when you watch this film. They are one tough group of horses. I mean, this was a tough group of cowboys. And oh, by the way, when we got done with the movie, we walked out and I said to Jennifer, coming from the guy's point of view, that's what it would be like with four guys together for 3,000 miles. And anybody seen the movie knows exactly what I mean.
A little bit of unvarnished story.
Yes.
No, Brokeback Mountain.
Blades and Saddles thrown in there.
Yes, and it was, you know, one of the things I loved about this movie, too, was it was edited beautifully. I know Cindy Meal, who has been on the show many times, the Buck movie producer, was involved. Ellie Price was in this movie a lot, by the way.
Really?
And it really did also tell both sides, the BLM side and the protesters side, the other side of the Mustang. And it didn't really take sides. I thought it was going to take, you know, the other side, the non-BLM side, and it really was going to be this, how terrible the BLM is, and it was not that at all. It really presented down the middle, this is the problem, and it really didn't come up with a solution, because I don't know there's a good solution, to be honest. It really did not come up with a good solution. Did you feel the same way, Mary Lynn? I really came away feeling, well, they told both sides of the story.
Yeah, and you were, you know, well, obviously as horse people, we're rooting for the you know, non-BLM side and everything else, but it did present both of them in a very clear light and everything else, and I you know, being in Pennsylvania and, you know, not really having the funds to, you know, get a horse at all right now, much less go out west to get a Mustang or anything else and do all this. I just wanted to get one so bad and wanted to find people who could adopt more. And, you know, it made you really feel helpless on that end of it, because they did present both sides of it so clearly that you could tell that it was just going to take, I don't know what to, you know, to help everything out.
You know, we. I think you're going to be proud when you watch it, Jamie. You're going to be proud that you own one.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just.
Yes.
You know, somebody was telling me that the Mustangs, they're so loyal and they're so like, once they trust you, she said, once they trust you, they will hurt themselves to do what you want. Like, you have to be careful with them because they will, if you say no.
You will find that in this movie.
Yeah, well, we have like a washed out road and I took Thor across it and none of the other horses would cross it. And I turn around, I'm like, that was probably not very smart of me to do that. You know, like, but he went because I told him to go. And it's like a venting of, I can't even tell you how glad I am you guys are reviewing this because it makes me just that much more excited.
Was not expecting as much about, I would say a quarter of the movie was the story of the Mustangs and the situation now and the pens and all the roundups and all that. That was a quarter of the movie, but they wove it into the movie so you didn't feel like, nobody would have sat through that half-hour documentary about the Mustangs, but they did because it was woven into the movie. And this film really did. It did draw you in, and, you know, there was drama between the guys, as there would be. and you wanted to smack one of them, and then the other guy, you really wanted to kick him. And, you know, there was everything you would expect. I was sitting there thinking, you know, this is four guys. Guys handle situations and getting mad at each other different than women do. I was thinking, would four women just kill each other halfway through? I don't know. Would they make it is my question.
There would be an explosion of sorts, just like spontaneous combustion.
Yeah, I just don't know if they could survive four women. I want to know. Four women grab some Mustangs and start in Mexico. I want to know. Film it for me because I don't know. I know I'm being sexist by saying that, but you guys know what I'm talking about. I don't know. Guys just handle those conflicts.
There would definitely be one night where everybody's crying around the fire drinking. And then the next morning, I'm sorry. No, it's okay. And then you go on.
Well, is there wine involved in that scenario?
There was a lot of beer drinking. Where were they getting the beer is my question, because there was a lot of beer drinking on this trip. But anyway, it was a good...
Some of his cameraman's got to make...
Yeah.
Cameraman making a run. Hey, go down to the beer store. It's 400 miles away. We'll see you in 3 days.
Yeah. It was really cool. Now, there was one other comment, too, that I wanted to bring up. That was made by our listeners this morning. Thank you, everybody, for posting. Barbara said, great movie, very well done. Loved the donkey. I'm not going to say any more about that. They added a lot of comedy in this. It was very well done. I do think they should have taken some alternate routes that weren't so hard on the horses. I don't know that they could have. There were big mountains in the way. So I don't know that there were very many alternate routes that wouldn't have been hard on the horses. But one thing I took away is, if you're going to do this trip, you have to be real comfortable going straight up and straight down on horses.
Oh my God, stop talking about it. You guys are I need to see it.
Hills are an issue.
You do. When is it coming by you, Jamie?
Well, I didn't get to see it because it came by last night, but it was a couple hours away, and that would be like, I don't know, 8 hours of a babysitter for a 1-2
right,
hour movie.
Right.
So I was unable to go see it. But
you have a big screen. You can rent it. No.
I'll just buy it and see it, because you can apparently just buy it.
Yeah, just go to the website. It's unbrandedthefilm.com. Yep. And they have several different versions that you can buy. So,
get all your students and their families and whoever you can get, and do like a big screen
party
showing with as many people from the barn and whatever that you can do, because it is so much better as a movie party.
Okay, good to know.
You can't see it in an actual theater.
I completely agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I do too.
It's a movie party movie.
I think it added a lot having the horse people in the audience. I really do.
Yeah.
I agree. All right, well, okay. I don't know if I've ever done this. I give it a full bail. What about you, Mary Ellen?
I definitely have to agree.
Yeah, Jennifer?
I would give it a full bail myself.
I'm going to give it a bail, yes.
Look at that. Three full bails.
The last time you gave a full bail was Minions, so this is going to be
And we all agree. All give full bails. There wasn't one. Well, wasn't one fake Winnie. It's perfect.
Not a one.
So there wasn't some like Buck Brenneman roping some horse's back leg and some woman who's like, I got all pasture.
Oh, well, there's some drama. That's for sure. But and oh, by the way, Jamie, you're going to need a box of tissues.
Real reality.
Yeah. You're going to need some tissues.
Gas blot. Yep.
Yeah. You're going to need some tissues. Okay. Jennifer needed her tissues, if that tells you anything. So thank you, Mary Ellen. We appreciate you for joining us today. Very good review. Good job.
Absolutely.
Mary Ellen,
thank you guys so much.
Before we let you guys go, if you want to adopt a Mustang, they have gentled Mustangs, which basically means that you can unload it and load it out of a trailer. It's halter broke, leadable, and it'll pick up all 4 feet. And that is the with the thoroughbred the trainer's incentive program, the TIP program, MustangHeritageFoundation.org. They're not saddle broke, but the adoption fee for these gentled Mustangs are $125. And they're already able to be touched and picked feet and all that stuff. So if anybody out there is considering getting a Mustang, and they have them all over the country because they'll ship them wherever you want. Mm-hmm. And there's some in California, Oregon, there's some in Florida, Nevada. I'm looking all at Texas. So you can go to MustangHeritageFoundation.org and find out more.
Very good. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
I will. Thank you guys so much.
Bye-bye. She did a great job with that. Good job.
I can't wait to see the movie.
You got to go see it. I'm definitely going to see it again. We'll buy this one for sure. Well, now we're going to take a break for Back on Track products. And Jennifer, what is coming up immediately after that?
We are going to have a chat with Dr. Tanya Cubitt from Performance Horse Nutrition. And she's going to talk about forage for winter. How much, when, where, why, etc.
All right. Very good. We'll be right back.
Michelle Gibson is one of today's top dressage talents. She was on the bronze medal dressage team at the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta, and she won the 2006 Collecting Gates Farm USCF National Intermediaire 1 Championship in Gladstone, New Jersey.
For my horses, I use all of the blankets, and I love them. When it's really cold, and normally you'd have to have a really thick blanket on them, I use the medium weight, and they stay perfectly warm. They're never too hot, they're never too cold. And my other favorite product is the cooler for before and after work. I find that they cool off better, and that when I use it before, they warm up a little bit easier. So those are my favorites, and I use them on all of the competition horses. We've got, I think, 4 or 5 horses that we have it on now, and they all respond really well to it. The horses that are a little bit more cold-blooded, I can use the same blanket on them that I use for the horses that have a little bit more body heat, and they're always, I never have to worry about them sweating under their blankets, and I know that they're gonna come out, you know, with their back softer and more supple after having the blankets on. I use the quilted wraps under the bandages on a lot of my horses. Whether they have an injury or whether they're just stocking up and need some support overnight, I use it on all of them. I recommend the Back on Track, the whole line of products to all of my clients. And I've also recommended the mattress pad to quite a few people that are complaining that their back is sore, or you know, they have some joint pain when they get up in the mornings or whatever. And I've suggested that they use the mattress pad for sure, because I know how much it's done for me and helped me.
And you can find all the Back on Track products, horse, human, and dog, at backontrackproducts.com.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products. And I'm so happy to welcome to the show Dr. Tanya Cubitt from Performance Horse Nutrition. And it's that forage time of year. Everybody's thinking about what to feed their horses forage-wise, either because it's hard to find and expensive, or they're just going, oh my gosh, it's going to get cold. How much do I need? So today, Dr. Cubitt, which one of those are you going to address?
Oh, Jennifer, thanks so much for having me back, and I'm glad to be talking about forage because, as you said, it is that time of year. And we'll kind of touch on a few of those. I know for you down in Florida, it's a big issue because you have to ship in a lot of hay. Quality may not be the best. So we'll touch on, especially going into the wintertime, people are nervous about how much hay am I going to need to take me through the wintertime. Storage becomes an issue if I don't know if I don't have a place to store it. Some people aren't quite sure how much they need, if they're going to be able to buy a big lot of it going into the wintertime. And one of the big things we have to remember is in most areas of the country, there's no grass. When we get to the wintertime, there's no grass growing. There may be snow on it. So the horse is pretty much 100% reliant on you for their fiber requirements. So what does that mean? If we take the average 1,000-pound horse, they should be getting a minimum of 1.5% of their body weight from forage per day. So for a 1,000-pound horse, that's 15 pounds of hay a day. And if we calculate how long a winter may last, this sounds really scary. When I was writing this down, I thought, oh gosh, 5 to 6 months of winter. But it really seems like that's how much winter some people have. If we calculate out the day, so that could be anywhere from 150 to 180 days. So if we times 15 pounds a day by 150 to 180 days, that comes out to be about 2,250 to 2,700 pounds of hay per horse per winter. Most people have more than one horse, so that's a lot of hay. That's a little over a ton of hay per horse.
Funny. When you did the math there, I thought, because at one point had 25 horses that I was caring for,
and we
made a lot of our own hay, so you know it was a big deal. But looking back and you hear that math, I'm going, oh, one horse, only a ton a year? That's not bad at all.
Oh, just for the wintertime. And that's a minimum. Obviously, if your horses struggle with maintaining weight throughout the winter, you want to make sure that you're feeding more hay. If you have a fat horse, use the winter to get some weight off them.
I'm a curiosity question.
Yes.
And we have to keep stressing the word minimum because I think the majority of us have horses that, as soon as the grass dies out, they're not air sponges anymore. You know, they have very normal nutritional needs and caloric needs when there's no grass. Is there an inherent risk in allowing a horse to have free choice hay, providing that the quality of the hay is appropriate?
If as you say, it's not just an air fern that is going to look at hay and get fat, then no, there's not a risk with having free choice hay. Because if you go back to think about what horses are designed to do, they're really designed to graze continually throughout the day. A lot of research has shown around 17 hours a day, horses would just be constantly nibbling away on grass. And that's how their digestive system is also built, to have a small amount of food constantly trickling through the digestive system. So one thing I will stress is the less you feed your horse when it comes to hay, when you're getting down closer to that minimum, and really if you had your horse on a true weight loss program, you might go slightly lower than that. You really have to use more management strategies, because the less your actual quantity you're feeding, you still have to be providing it to them, mimicking that natural grazing behavior. So if I'm feeding a horse that gobbles down his hay really quickly, 15 pounds of hay a day, in only two meals, he's going to have a lot of time where he's standing around not chewing on anything and probably developing gastric ulcers and other behavioral issues.
A whole new headache.
So the less you're feeding of hay, the more you have to, whether you're using slow feeder nets or you're breaking up your 15 pounds of hay into smaller, say, five lots, and you go out to the barn five times and you're throwing in a little bit of hay just so that you can kind of stretch it out. Mm-hmm. The more hay you feed, the less management is involved with providing it to the horse, yeah, because they're able to just kind of nibble away at it.
Now, this was something it kind of a light bulb moment the other day. I'm a hay net nut. I love hay nets because I hate to see the horses standing on their hay, but I love to feed my horses lots of hay. And I have one hay net that has teensy weensy little holes. They're 1.5 inches, maybe 2 inches, really tiny hay net, whole hay net. And I have another hay net that's got kind of medium sized holes. If I make a fist, I can fit my fist through the hole when it's full, but not much more. Huge difference between the one that is the size of a $0.50 and the one that's the size of my fist. I can take that same 10 pounds of hay and it will last him 45 minutes in that medium-sized hole net. It'll take him 3 hours in the teeny-weeny size. That amazed
me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And those slow feeder hay nets are ideal when you're feeding towards the minimum end of the forage requirement, because as you said, it takes a whole lot longer. And I know, you know, some people might be listening and saying, gosh, who's got time to throw hay into the stall five times a day? Well, no, not many people do. Most of us have to have a job to support these animals and this hobby that we have. So finding ways that we can still make them fit into our schedule by using those slow feeder nets is ideal. You can really pack it. There was an article done a while ago in one of the magazines showing a lot of DIY ways to build the slow feeders as well. I think I saw one that was pretty cool because some people get concerned that their horses are yanking on it and still some hay is falling onto the ground using one of those big plastic water troughs, the Rubbermaid water troughs, and putting the hay in it and then having a piece of mesh that kind of sits on top of it and floats down. So they're never wasting any of it because it's always in the bottom of the feeder. So that's another option too.
Cool.
But as I say, The less you're feeding, the more management comes into it. I've been speaking with colleagues recently saying that we really need to flip-flop the terms hard keeper and easy keeper, because from a management perspective, the fat or obese horse is really hard to manage and keep.
You're right.
You still need to feed them a certain amount of forage to maintain gut health, but the less you're feeding, the harder it is for us to manage them. But when you've got a thinner horse, you just feed them, keep feeding them.
Just give them food all the
much,
time.
Much easier. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I really want to stress the main, you know, we've talked in the past about how forage is so very important, but going into the winter time, I mentioned earlier that they're not going to have any grass, or they're 100% reliant on you for their forage requirements from a gut health standpoint. But also we have to remember that how do you keep a horse warm in the wintertime? The simplest way to keep a horse warm in the wintertime is to feed him hay. I'm sure many of your listeners have stuck their hand in a bale of hay that was baled slightly damp, and it's very, very hot. The exact same principle is occurring in the hindgut of the horse. When those bacteria that live back there in the large intestine break down fiber, they create excess byproduct heat. A byproduct energy, which is heat. So the simplest way to keep your horse warm in the wintertime is to provide them with plenty of fiber, because it'll keep them warm from the inside out. It's like you having a cup of coffee. Sometimes, no matter how many sweaters you put on, you just need a cup of coffee or hot soup to get you warm from the inside out. And that's going to be the same with your horses.
So from the management perspective, the weather is cooling off. Is it better to gradually increase your horse's pounds of hay per day over a, let's say, month period of time when cold weather is expected to start? Or is it better to go, okay, I'm going to keep his hay the same because it's really not getting chilly yet, and then Sunday evening you look at the weather report and it's supposed to have a cold snap come Monday morning and increase his hay by 5 pounds?
Ideally, that would be the perfect way to do it, would be that gradual increase. Because in the fall, well, another huge issue that we notice is impaction colic. Because we have the grasses start to dry off, then all of a sudden we think, oh gosh, we've got to feed our horse all this hay now. And we have twofold. The grasses have dried off, and now we're feeding 100% or very close to 100% forage coming from this dried hay. So we've got a much drier forage going into the digestive system, because remember, grass has a lot of moisture in it, and it's cooler weather, so they start to drink less. And it takes a little while for the digestive system water balance to kind of level out and normalize again.
Sure.
So we see a lot of impaction colic. If you ask your local vet what's the biggest issue they see in the fall weather, it's impaction colic, because we have this change in environment and that's affecting the horses twofold. So if you like to plan ahead and you have the ability to do that, it is a really good idea to slowly build up the amount of hay that you're giving and make sure that your horse is drinking, especially as the weather is changing. And I know up here in Virginia, we've been a little bit lucky. We feel like it's not quite winter yet, because we've had a really warm fall. But as soon as that first snap of cold weather comes, we're also going to see that affecting horses environmentally. So really make sure that while they're also eating plenty of forage, and you can gradually build them up to that, that they're also drinking plenty of water to avoid that kind of imbalance in hydration in the gut.
There you go. Good idea. Don't just go throwing an extra half a bale in there on Monday morning. Yeah.
And one more thing to leave the listeners with is a half a bale of hay is not the same as a half a bale of hay. If you get my drift,
exactly.
You have to weigh. Because I go to many farms and they say, well, I've been feeding a half a bale of hay all winter long, or I've been feeding a bale of hay to eat for my horses all winter long, and I don't know why they're losing weight. And you pick up one bale and it's 40 pounds, and you pick up another bale and it's 20 pounds. So that's a significant difference in the amount of hay that you're actually providing your horse. So get a cheap scale. For hay, you can use those luggage scales.
Now, the luggage scales or fish scales are great.
Or
absolutely.
Fish scales, yeah.
Yep.
But it's really good, especially with your 4-H and Pony Club groups, to do tests with the kids and really get them to get an idea of what does a pound feel like? What does 2 pounds feel like? So when they pick up the hay, the amount of hay they normally give their pony every day, they're like, oh, this feels a bit light. I might give another flake today because it's a lighter bale.
Very good. And after a while, if you're careful with that and you weigh it every day for a couple of weeks, you do develop a feel for it, don't you?
You do. Yep. And that's an invaluable skill.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Cubitt, for explaining to us how much our horse needs and why, and the best way to do it. Where can folks get a hold of you if they've got more questions or have some nutritional needs that need to be solved?
Any more questions, you can look us up at performancehorsenutrition.com on the internet. Give us a call, email us. We'd be glad to help.
Perfect. Thanks a lot.
So you've been thinking about getting a manure spreader? Well, here's why I think you should consider Mill Creek. They've been in business for almost 30 years with continuously improved designs to meet the needs of horse owners like you. At Mill Creek, models are virtually maintenance and trouble-free thanks to their exclusive sealed bearings. They're the only compact spreaders you'll find like that. Mill Creek customer service is second to none. Call them and you'll reach a knowledgeable person in their own factory right in Pennsylvania. With 8 models available, they're happy to help you choose the right spreader for your budget and barn. 5 models can be pulled with ATV or garden tractors. If you'd rather have a PTO drive, they've got those too. At Mill Creek, spreaders have the lowest sides and tongue weight of any on the market. One of the biggest problems we always had with our spreaders is they just rust. Everything rusts out, and then you have to replace the metal, and it's just a pain. If you don't want to ever have to worry about your manure spreader rusting again, then consider the Mill Creek stainless steel line. They are the world's first and only compact manure spreaders built out of stainless steel, and they're warranted against rust through for life. Julie Goodnight, clinician and star of Horse Master with Julie Goodnight on RFD TV, has owned and used the Mill Creek spreader every day for over 9 years. She knows they represent great value and quality and is proud to endorse them. So for the best compact manure spreading equipment you can buy, check out Mill Creek's lineup. Years of trouble-free operation will get you out of the barn faster and give you more time for your horses. Give them a call today at 800-311-1323 or visit their website at millcreekspreaders.com. The perfect holiday gift. Well, you're listening to Horses in the Morning, and I am Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair today. Thank you so much for joining us. Good morning. Have another cup of coffee. I think Jamie's already had about 12.
You're killing me right now. Let me just tell you why.
Because you ran out of coffee?
PayPal is the devil, because my computer keeps me logged in. Like, all I have to do is click the password's there. Everything's there. Just click to log in. It remembers me. So far this morning, I have purchased a DVD and I just bought off Amazon a luggage scale, because I'm like, you know what? I don't weigh my hay. I need to weigh my hay, even though my bales are like 120 pounds a piece. Like, so I feed like four times a day. I mean, great. I'm like, I need a luggage scale, and the shipping on the damn thing was more than the actual scale.
You know, you probably find the same with the manure spreader. Did you order one of the Mill Creek spreaders too with your PayPal account?
Trust me. Chad is going, as soon as we get the next farm, we've already looked at them. We're getting to Mill Creek. You have to.
Get one of the stainless steel ones too. Because let me tell you what, nothing sucks more than your manure spreader rusting to pieces.
Yeah. And I've never seen a manure spreader that wasn't rusted to pieces. So you got to get that one.
Oh, we had to change out the chain that runs that's in the bottom that pushes it all out. We had to change that out in the winter in the ice several times. Oh, what a pain in the ass that was. Anyway,
you get for living where the hell you lived. It's awful there.
You know who else is not having to change her manure spreader chain? Because it's not really an issue. She has people for that. And that's Mary Alice Malone. Now, Mary Alice Malone, what farm is that again, Jennifer?
That would be Iron Springs.
Iron Springs Farm, big dressage facility up in Pennsylvania, very well known. Breeds, trains, all of that stuff. Well, that's owned by Mary Alice Malone. And it's Mary Alice Dorrance Malone, if you want to be exact. And she just bought a little place down in Wellington to add to her two adjoining properties in Wellington. So this would be the third place. And for $14.4 million. It's 60. Yeah. It's 48 acres, and it has 14,000 square feet of buildings, including a stables and other farm uses, it says. Oh, and who is Mary Alice Dorrance Malone? She is a direct descendant of the Campbell Soup fortune.
Never heard of it.
So when I got to thinking about it, I went, well, wait a minute. Chester Weber's mom, Charlotte, is also listed on the Forbes, top 100 list of billionaires, because she was Campbell's Soup. And I got to thinking, well, the two must have been related then at some point. So Jennifer and I did some research this morning, and here's your bit of trivia. In 1897, John T. Dorrance was a nephew of the general manager of Campbell's Soup when it first started. There was actually a guy named Campbell who started it. But Campbell was not the one who made the tons of money in it. John T. Dorrance, a nephew of the general manager, began working for the company for $7.50 a week. And he was a chemist with a degree from MIT and started at $7.50 a week. Well, he developed the commercially viable method for condensing the soup and having the quantity so that you could get it in cans in a condensed form. And he's the one who invented that. He eventually became president of the company from 1914 to 1930. And eventually he bought out the Campbell family. So it was his money, and it, you know, he's the one that developed Campbell's Soup into what it is today, and that's why there's so much money that went to the heirs. So Mary Alice, looking it up, is worth about $3.6 billion, and Chester's mom must have got the short end of the stick, or somebody didn't invest right, I don't know, but is worth about $2 billion, according to Forbes. So they are both cousins. They are direct descendants, and they are related, which is what I went on to find out. And then that led to the question of, why isn't there endurance in my past? That's what that led to. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing how these little ideas kind of became such big, giant. You know, they pay millions of dollars for generations. You know, if you look at Calumet, was a baking powder.
I know, like, it still is.
Still is, obviously, and they're still making money. I mean, there's just generations of people. I'm like so mad that my great 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 grandfather did not invent something. Come on.
Do you know what? I had a client. I didn't have this client myself. I wish I had, but one of my compatriots had a client when I was in the insurance business, lived in central Pennsylvania, who made millions and millions of dollars. And do you know what that person invented? They invented the serrated salt packets that you get at fast food restaurants. You know, the ones that have the little serrations in them? Not the flat ones, but the ones that, you know, you pop open, there's little channels. That's what they invented. And they make a royalty on every one of those that sold. Millions of dollars every year.
When I was at Monty's place this summer, they had somebody coming through and kind of getting this VIP tour. And after they left, we were all like, okay, so who was that? And it was the guy who invented, are you sitting down? The barcode.
Oh my gosh. I guess somebody had to invent it, but
imagine how much money that dude had. Like, you look at like a crayon, there's a barcode on every crayon. Apparently, every time the barcode gets scanned, this guy gets money.
Oh, geez.
Good Lord. Talk about some. You invent the barcode, everybody's fine for the rest of the history. I can't even imagine. So, yeah, I just, you know, it's like all you need is like one good invention or one hit song. Yeah.
Well, we know you're not going to be doing the hit song, so you better get to inventing, Jamie.
I might be able to. You never know. I could start singing right now. Just watch out. But I won't, because I'll give you a news story real quick. We're going to get Victoria on here soon. You know, remember the Vox Populi, the Voice of the People Award that Penny Chenery invented and
for
created?
Resources.
I didn't hear about the voting this year, but probably because it was like, did they even need to vote? Guess who won?
American Pharoah.
You are correct. It is American Pharoah. Some of the other horses that were nominated were Beholder, that amazing mare who had an undefeated campaign this year and beat all the men in the Pacific Classic. And then Rachel's Valentina, which is the two-year-old filly out of Rachel Alexandra. Of course, she has just cleaned up. She didn't win the Breeders' Cup, but her first two races just blew everybody away. So fantastic mares he was up against, but he apparently was the huge winner. Like, it wasn't even a competition. But at the end of the voting, after he died, Shared Belief got a lot of write-in votes. So I thought if anybody's going to, and I didn't even realize the voting was open, otherwise we would have talked about it. But I thought when I was thinking about the race, I'm like, huh. Like, who would beat American Pharoah? And I would think the only horse that would ever come close would be Shared Belief, since he's, you know, he passed away a couple weeks ago. But other than that, I mean, is all American Pharoahs to win? I thought there's not even a horse that should be second.
Very good. Well, it's that time of the week.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
Yes, and that is the time when we talk to our dear friend from over in England, our Scottish friend from England, Victoria. Hello, my dear.
Hello.
How are you?
I am good, thank you. How are you guys?
Oh, living the dream. First of all, how's your horse doing? Are you guys, is this the time of year where nobody does anything, or is this the time of year where it's not raining and you can finally ride?
Well, for me, I have got such a busy summer with starting with badminton and sort of finishing up in October with Horse and Country and going to events. And obviously, I also work at Hicksted, so I've got their summer shows. So when it gets around to this time of year, I'm like, yeah, I've got time to ride and compete, and I want to compete every single weekend. And then I look and there's nothing on. So that is the answer. I'm desperately trying to compete, but struggling. But I'm off to do dressage on Saturday, so hopefully it will go well.
You are getting desperate to compete if you're just going to a dressage show.
Indeed, and doing one test on my own. So, yeah.
Oh, that's cool, though. I'm the same way. It's finally the time of year where we can compete. And, I mean, there's nothing here in the summer, but everybody goes to all the states around me, California, and everybody leaves. And then so this time of year, there's no major events to go to because everything else is outside the state or – Yeah, it's frustrating because there's no big competitions, but at least there's a bunch of schooling shows to go to, so you can at least get out and do stuff. But I get it. It's a time of year to ride over here. So speaking of, well, I don't even know how to segue into the donkey.
Well, we've had some inclement weather, it's fair to say, in the UK and Ireland. Actually, down south has been fine, but up north been really badly affected by floods. And there's been entire fields that have been just waterlogged, cars getting stuck. It's just been horrendous. But yes, it's quite a sweet story about a donkey in Ireland who got stuck in the flood water and nobody would rescue him until this lady from an animal rescue charity found these two guys who happened to be professional rowing coaches, and they rowed out in a boat to rescue this donkey. And there's amazing pictures on our website. You can see him. He's got one of those like rings around his neck to help him float. And so they basically pulled him through the water to safety. And there's a picture of him that's kind of gone viral. I've seen it everywhere online in the last few days, and it's the donkey kind of having reached dry land, and he looks like he's smiling with delight, and obviously he's not. He's obviously grimacing, having been cold and wet, but everyone's like, wow, look at this donkey smile. But it is a nice story and one with a happy ending, thank goodness.
Well, it's so stinking cute, that picture. It's the same one I noticed. It looks like he's smiling, and the girl who's right behind him holding on to him smiling, but he looks like a half a drowned rat. Poor little thing. Oh my gosh. But what an amazing, amazing photo, I guess, journal of the rescue, because all right, they got a rope around him, and one of those, like, you know, when they throw it, man overboard, and they throw one of those orange things out, it's around his little neck. Poor little thing. I'm glad they found somebody to go back and get him. And I guess they said it was worth the danger, the guys that saved him. So,
which was really nice. And it's so nice to see him in the stables as well. And he's obviously got a heat lamp on because there's a red glow in the stable in the pictures. And you know that you guys might not get like this since it's so nice and warm over there. But over here in the winter, it's just so desperately cold and wet at times. And there's something lovely about bringing your horse in from the field and putting them in their stable with their big, warm, thick bed and tucking them up. And I think that's probably like 100-fold in this situation. Cold, wet donkey in a very deep straw bed with a heat lamp on. It's kind of cute.
Yeah. Maybe I wanted to snuggle up and take a nap with him. So you can see those pictures on horseandcountry.tv. Now, the other most adorable thing with deep bedding and a nice warm blanket. Do they really need blankets? Shetland ponies. Oh my God, this is the cutest thing though.
Well, that's the thing. Shetland ponies don't normally need blankets. But this group had been rescued and they were so thin and they just needed the condition. So they've managed to get little pint-sized rugs for them in bright pink and purple. So it's really cute. So it means that they can be kept warm and it'll help them retain their weight they're putting on and instead of being little shivering Shetlands. So a nice story.
Oh, I love listening to you talk. Absolutely shivering Shetlands.
Shetland. Oh my God. Can't be alliteration.
Oh my gosh. So this is so cute. So 21 ponies were rescued after being neglected. 28, it says later on in the story. There's two different.
Oh, they're multiplying. Yeah,
they're multiplying. As you read, by the end of the article, there's 427 Shetlands that were rescued.
And all of them are wearing rugs. Yes, no. it's quite worrying, isn't it, that you get these big groups of horses that are all being scooped up together because it puts such demand on our equine welfare charities. So I'm glad these ones have been kept together, though, and hopefully they will be looked after and hopefully rehomed in the future.
Well, for those of our English listeners, or if you want to import some, you can go to, it's the RSPCA is the one that you can actually eventually adopt these out, rspca.org.uk. So you'll be able to go. Boy, that's the next thing we're going to hear. Victoria's going to be like, yeah, I adopted a little Shetland with a rug because it was so cute.
Yes, it would be tempting. And I could probably keep one in my back garden. It'll save me mowing the lawn. So, yeah.
See, I could rationalize.
Yeah, I'm sure the boyfriend will love that.
He's complaining about having one horse, let alone having a Shetland in the back garden.
Oh, you know what? If he's complaining about one horse, just dump him now. Don't even bother, you know.
Not idea. It was his horse. He had her as a racehorse. So therefore, he can't blame me for looking after her. So
that's right. It's his fault.
It's your responsibility, you know. That's the thing.
It's his credit card that should be paying for everything.
I know. Yeah. I shall tell him this, but I don't think he'll do that very well.
Wait, is he a husband or boyfriend?
Boyfriend, yeah. No ring.
Another problem. Dump him today.
I shall tell him this.
Victoria's never coming back.
if you need me to talk to him, just let me know.
We can help you.
Yeah, give him a lecture. Send him a cross email from the Horse Radio Network saying our listeners are disappointed.
That's right.
Oh my God, I love her so much. Okay, let's see. I don't want to talk about the horse that died. I can't do that today. So talk to me about the blog.
Oh, there's also a sad story in the blog, so we can skip over that. But
okay, skip that one too.
All right, skip that one. Great. Let's go back to the boyfriend. The sad story.
I think we've talked enough about him. Steph is one of our bloggers, and I love her because she's a mum of two, and she's real, like, you know, a family lady. She's also very clever. She's got a PhD, and she's been at Grand Prix and was kind of long listed for the Olympics a few years ago. And she gets these like driving bred horses and teaches them Grand Prix. So it's really cool. So yes, you should read her latest blog. And there is a sad story, which you can read if you want to. But also she talks a bit about her little girl, Annabelle, who's just got her first pony and she started doing dressage and how she managed to go wrong in her test, even though she was having it called out by dad. and also it's quite interesting because she's doing dressage and she's loving riding and starting doing jumping, but also she's very good at swimming and she's very good at tennis, and so it's interesting to hear what Steph says about how do you encourage your child to kind of take part in sport and let them ride but not kind of let it overtake everything else. So it's a good blog.
Well, I know my husband and I actually have this discussion because I'm pretty sure my son is going to be like the most amazing inventor in riding Rolex, and he is convinced that he's going to be a professional baseball player. And I'm like, I can't let him play baseball. He has to ride.
You know what you're going to end up with? You're going to end up with like a curler. It's going to take up curling or something.
He's probably going to be like a professional swimmer. You know, there's a couple things in the world that I do not want him to do. And that is number one, football.
I knew that was coming.
I mean, obviously it's just dangerous and I don't like it. And I don't want to go watch basketball, you know, and I don't really want to watch swimming. So, you know, he's going to have to do something that I want to watch.
You know what? He's going to be in the chess team. And then you're going to have to go to like chess matches. And
Oh my gosh. It's a kiss of death right now, what I'm saying. I mean, he's obviously going to be a basketball playing swimmer, you know, chess player. I don't think back to this blog that you get to choose. So that's interesting. I'll have to read her perspective on how she kind of handles it being a professional rider and not just and trying to let them do other things besides ride. Interesting. And then we've got a video of the week.
Yes, indeed. So our video of the week is it's Dutch dressage rider Hans Peter Minderhout. There's testing my pronunciation from the World Dressage Masters. And this horse is so beautiful. There's just something about a grey, and it's quite a young horse. It's making its Grand Prix debut, so it's still that beautiful, like, steel grey colour, and just absolutely stunning. So really enjoyed watching it in action. You can see, have a look and see if you think it will be an Olympic star in the future.
Oh, cool. That sounds great. Well, Victoria, as always, we appreciate you coming on. We still loved your message you left us for the radio. It was fantastic. Glenn, do you still have that audio?
I do still have it. I don't have it ready to play. Sorry. We played it last week, and then she had technical trouble and couldn't get on the show.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I thought she'd want to hear herself.
Pretty much all she did was diss the United States, though, in that message, in a very couched sort of Victoria lovely way. She.
I didn't mean it. I love it. That's why I come out to see you.
You do. You come to visit us every year. That's true.
So yes, we love it. And as soon as they have a horse TV channel and a major bookmaker. You guys are a bit funny about the gambling industry, which is obviously what my boyfriend does. Then we'll be over there and living in the hot weather, definitely. So.
Well, you know what? This might be a good time to dump him. Just saying. You could move here.
No. Vegas, baby. Come on.
Oh,
let's
there
go.
You, yeah, you'd be close to Jamie that way.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I'll tell him he must move to.
And you will eliminate that rainy, wet problem if you live in Vegas.
Indeed.
Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon. Have a great week.
You too. I'm so glad she still comes on with us.
I know. I'm not sure why she does, but she does. You know, she's been coming on with us for years and years and years and years.
I know.
Yeah.
She still comes. But stop telling her to dump her boyfriend.
I know. I just was. That was my theme of the day. I don't think she's dumping him anytime soon. I think it's fine. Everything's good there. Hey, do you want to do a list quick before we end the show? Something a little holiday-ish? We should have kept Victoria on for this. I want to find out if they had the same toys in Scotland. So I have the list.
By the way, Lucky's going back to the vet today, so... I do have a place to be this morning.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
More vet.
What's he going back to the vet for?
Because he had that culture in his ear done because his ears won't heal, and they finally found what it's like the most resistant bacteria on the planet is what he has in his ear. So they had to compound medication for him and his ear, and so he'll be getting the first treatment, the first of potentially three treatments for the ear infection. So
Then I'll tell you what, we'll just do this list on Friday.
You can do it now. I have my appointments. I got plenty of time. Just giving you a little bit of a Lucky update.
Got it.
And it's all good news with the Luckster.
No, good. You know, that's good. You don't need any more bad news. Well, let's talk about toys. I don't know if you had a lot of toys growing up. You were horse girl. And horse girls tended not to have a ton of toys. They were out playing with their horses.
We want horse stuff.
That's right. You want horse stuff. So I have here the list of the top toys of all time. And we'll see between the three of us who had these toys. And so we'll start at number 10 here. Trivial Pursuit. We used to play Trivial Pursuit in the car. Jennifer and I would just get the cards out. Did anybody ever play Trivial Pursuit with the board?
What was the game board for?
I don't know. Nobody ever used it. No. Because you just asked each other questions.
Because you have to get the pie pieces. And if you get the pie pieces, then you can make your way to the
middle.
Nobody
ever did that crap. They just asked each other questions.
Brothers and I played that.
Did you actually use the board?
In my 20s, religiously, with the board. Oh. Love that game. I still love the game. Actually, I have got the Genius Edition as well recently. So
I didn't know 99% of the questions. That was part of my problem.
Oh, that first edition is like ridiculous. I mean, it's the worst.
We had a couple of the specialty editions too. I forget about what, but we used to do that on car trips. That was how we killed time on car trips.
You know how you can get specialty Monopoly games made?
Like Horseopoly?
Horseopoly. Yeah.
They need to have horse version.
I'm sure they do. They probably do have a horse
trivia
game
with a little
somewhere.
Board. And instead of having pie pieces, you get like, little bales of hay, and you have to stack
little flakes you put in the bale.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
All right, so Trivia Pursuit, we agree it should be on this list. And the Frisbee, well, you know, The thing about the Frisbee is that guy, there was a story behind that guy too. And it was kind of by accident that he came up with the Frisbee. And look at that. They're probably still selling as many Frisbees for dogs as anything right now. I never had a Frisbee dog, one that was smart enough to catch it and retrieve it.
I know. Well, I have so many herding dogs that they obsess over Frisbees. So I just constantly buy them whenever I go to a garage sale and somebody sells them. Like, yes, $1 Frisbee as opposed to $10. But what is this list again?
It says the top toys of all time.
Of all time. Yes. Okay. Trivial Pursuit is number 10 or number 1?
Number 10.
Okay.
And then Frisbee's in there. Atari. The original Atari game, which we owned. I owned every electronic game that ever came down the pike.
We had the Intellivision. My parents were too cheap to get the
Atari.
Atari.
How about, I never heard Playmobil. Did you guys ever? I never. That was Playmobil. Yeah, no. 40 years for Playmobil. I never knew that was that old.
Breyer has a game called Breyer Game of Horse Sense, and apparently it is the equine Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, I didn't know that. No, we have to get it and ask questions on the air. We'll have to pick one up. You know what else is on this list? Playing cards, of course, because everybody uses playing cards. Matchbox cars. We used to have the whole tracks and everything. I had four boys in the family. Had to have matchbox cars. Never owned a Barbie. Did either one of you ever own a Barbie?
I had the Barbie Palomino. Mama. Hi, buddy.
You had the horse?
I had the Barbie horse.
Yeah. Jennifer, because did you ever have Barbie?
No. I hated Barbie because she couldn't sit properly on a horse.
You're right. I mean, who scissors sits on a horse?
Yeah.
Rubik's Cube was on that list, and I never could figure that out. Never.
Can I tell you a little story about the Rubik's Cube? Yes. My brother had a learning disability growing up, and so imagine my mother's surprise when he comes in and he's like, "Mom," he was probably 10. He's like, "Mom, I did it. I did the Rubik's Cube." My mom freaked out. Like, "Oh my God. Oh my God. He did." Oh, and she was like calling people, and it started to scare my brother. And he was like, "Mom, I just peeled the stickers off and put them back."
Creative thinker.
Well, he was smart enough to think of that. Is he in prison today, by the way?
He's close a couple times, so he should be probably in prison. I love him. He's never listening to this show, so I could say whatever I want. The dude probably should have been arrested about 10 times, but he's just smart enough to be that conniving.
Not get caught, yeah. The yo-yo, number 3 on the list.
Awful thing.
Yeah, yeah. It requires coordination. It's not good. And then number 2 on the list, Monopoly. You guys mentioned it earlier. Not Horsopoly, but the original game, the 12-hour game of memory.
Have you ever known anybody, by the way, that's really good at a yo-yo?
We had one person that was in our acting company that was good at yo-yo. But you would expect
what
that.
What person was that?
A juggler. They were also a juggler. Mark could do yo-yo real well. But
he's a professional juggler.
Yes, he got hand-eye coordination. I think that's the problem, is most of us do not.
It's kind of nerdy, and so is juggling. So it probably goes hand in hand.
And then number 1, any guesses? Number 1 toy of all time?
Briar horse.
No. Jennifer could probably guess.
What beats out playing cards? I don't know.
Yeah. Lego. Lego.
Ah!
Number 1 toy of all time.
That's true because they are also an excellent home self-defense toy or item. So, yeah, I get it. They're multitaskers.
Yeah, you could.
They're the worst things ever for a mother in the dark when you're walking to your kid's room.
Does he have his usual contingent of Legos all over the floor?
No, because I won't let him have any Legos because my sister-in-law has kids with Legos and I'm like, nope. And Chad loved Legos. Apparently he's like, "We're going to get Legos." And I'm like, "No, we're not."
Chad's going to go out and buy the million pack.
Yeah.
And you go to the Lego store down at Disney. They have a Lego store. And of course they have Lego World. Oh, he would probably love Lego World.
We've been to Legoland.
Oh, were you? Yeah, yeah. Was it fun for the child or more for Chad?
It's for like maybe like the ages of 3 to 8. Love it.
Yeah.
But he was like a year and a half. He couldn't really.
Oh, he'd love it now.
Hey, Glenn.
Yes.
Did you keep the receipt for that thing we picked up the other day?
Oh, for Jamie? Yeah, I probably should have returned that.
Okay, yeah. Don't send me any Lego.
You know what that means now. You're going to get about 12 boxes of Legos this year.
My mother-in-law, she was like, well, does he want some Legos? And I was like, no, not a one.
You know what he's getting from us now, right? I mean,
American Pharaoh halter for $10,000? Is that what you're getting?
Made out of Legos. Yeah, not happening. All right, let's call it a day. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. Tomorrow on the show, we have Mary Kitzmiller, who has a certain guy named Guy on the show coming to us.
Oh, Guy McLean?
Guy McLean's going to be on the show all the way from Australia. So we'll be chatting with him. And Mary, as I understand it, is out in Vegas. I've been seeing all the pictures for gambling and stuff. She's out in Vegas at the NFR. So we're going to be getting a report from there as well.
Check this out. The NFR and I believe the big veterinary conference that everybody always goes
time.
To. Same time in Vegas.
Yes.
And that's yes, Cowboys.
I did. Yeah, I thought that was they did that on purpose. I think it was a chance for the vets to party hardy, even hardier than they usually do.
All sorts of horse people out in Vegas right now. Pretty cool.
Yep, it's packed full of cowboy hats. Well, thanks everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning and again Friday. Really bad ads. I don't know what the prize is, but I think it is our. It might be our. Is it our last really bad ads, Jennifer?
No,
the 18th. You know what though, Jamie. They have to get their ads in. 18th is 2 weeks of really bad ads, and that's only 2 weeks left to qualify for the big drawing for the Shake and Fork worth $300 that we're going to do next Friday.
Yeah, so this is the last week you can get your ad in, really.
So, yeah, get your ads in either this week or next week. Get them in now because your last chance. Everybody that submits, even if we don't read your ad on air, will qualify. So we'll do the drawing next Friday, see who's the big winner of the Shake and Fork.
All right.
All right. See you, everybody.
Your girl, people. Have a good one.